Hello and welcome to Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji. Niaga Spotlight goes through the week in business and future affairs. Market Watch, industries, analysis and insights, we've got you covered on Niaga Spotlight. Well, today on, of course, analysis, Prof. Wong Chin Huat, political scientist and deputy head strategy at the Asia Headquarters for UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network at Sunway University, joins me online to discuss the economic cost of by-elections. Hi, Chin Huat. Good morning, Prof. How are you doing?
Good morning. Thank you, Tamina, for having me.
Wonderful. So, Chin Huat, let's get started off by looking at some of the various factors behind high expenses for elections. Please begin by explaining these two very interesting concepts, simultaneity and predictability, when it comes to Malaysian elections. And which is preferable and why?
Well, when we talk about simultaneous elections, we mean that federal and maybe most or if not all state elections are held together. This has been the case in the past, and many people thought that this year the state elections for the six states on their own is a bad idea. Now, I want to argue that simultaneity is actually very rare in federal country, especially in parliamentary system, because that different legislatures may have their own tie, and there is an argument why this is good to have them separated, because if you have elections for different legislature, different offices at different time, you capture public mood at different time, therefore they tend to produce different landscape and to enable a better check and balance. In other words, you would not have one party winning all states at the most states at the same time. And if you have a government change at the federal, you wouldn't have a shipping change, because over time you actually have adjust yourself to that. So this is actually good in the sense of in that it would reduce the cost of extreme volatility. What really make actually our elections more expensive on ordinary people is unpredictability. For example, we know when New Zealand next election would be in October, months ahead. And we certainly know when US elections would be 100 years from now. But we wouldn't know whether the 16th general elections would be held in February 2028 or any time earlier. That unpredictability actually caused market anxiety, prevent people from making decisions ahead, even in their daily decisions. That's a cost that often that has been overlooked.
Absolutely. And I think it's also worth bears mention that we spent around 120 million ringgit over the past 3 years alone when it came to those unexpected and unanticipated by-elections. A little bit more on that later, though. Moving along, though, now, Prof. Chin Huat, let's delve into some of the challenges for determining fixed budget when it comes to elections overall. What are some of the main issues, as well as, of course, the main areas towards which budget goes, as well as the problem with having a very fixed amount for it?
Well, I think certain parts that you can't really control, for example, how much the parties want to spend on political campaigns and so on. But other things are probably much easier to control. For example, if you know when the dates would be ahead, you can make arrangement for people who you need to employ, you need to train, and to conduct elections and so on. All this can actually minimize it. And we also need to think about costs incurred on the voters. Every elections now, we know that many voters have to travel back from far away, whether on land or by air and so on. And all these incur costs, not just on the voters, but on other people's using public transport or using the roads or railway. And it also increases sound pollution, air pollution, and loss in time because of traffic jams or a risk, public health risk because of crowd and so on. Right. All these things could have been reduced if we actually expand the facilities of early voting or postal voting to all voters who are out of their states. This is done by many countries. We know that Indonesians and Filipinos queuing up in their at their embassies here for their presidential and national elections. Even though the systems are slightly different, we can actually do all these things. So there are parts of that our election costs can be controlled by minimizing or streamlining the process.
Absolutely. And also when it comes to tweaking the process, other examples might include saving on flag lines if your campaign is 100% digital. And of course, there's traveling costs, whereby I think a lot of the travel companies, airline companies, should be a lot more cooperative. Thanks, Chinhua. Moving along, Prof, let's discuss significant supplementary costs during elections, including public education and other areas of interest. How do these also crop up, particularly in a growing as well as a very vibrant democracy as what we've seen in Malaysia over the past 5 years?
I would rather see all these costs as investment because for good things in life, there are always some costs. For example, if you want to wear the same dress for everyone in the whole country, you save costs in production, but that's not the kind of life you want. So likewise in politics, if you want to have choices, we want to have effective check and balances, then you need to have elections. You need to have all this contestation through electoral campaign and so on. And in the process for people to make informed decision, you need to help the voters to make sense of the complicated political issues. And for that reason, you
Hello, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Okay, for that matter, you need to actually have you need to actually have education. So for me, all these costs are actually investment to make our democracy vibrant.
Very true. And also, of course, it comes to investing from all political parties across the divide. And this can actually include national advertising, providing election process information to citizens, particularly key considering that we did have, of course, Undi 18 bypass quite recently, which added a few million voters onto the electoral rolls. Right. Prof, if I could move on to the next part that I would like to discuss. Now, other factors concurrent with election periods in general are government debt, reduced taxes, postponing of key economic and business decisions, and slower credit growth. So what are the overall impacts on inflation and economic growth as well when it comes to general election seasons and also when you have these additional elections and by-elections throughout one fiscal year?
Tamina, this is a very good question. I mean, our by-election or state elections, I don't think they produce as much impact on inflation and, say, some rock star concert in Western capital. I think the larger question here is that the incentive for politicians to avoid making the right or necessary policy decision because they can manipulate the election date. That's come back also to another part of the issues. When we come to election season, that's almost sometimes by election season that politicians use policy to buy votes. So they give very generous offer to different sectors, for example, pay rise for civil servants, subsidies for this, subsidies for that, and projects, local development projects that might not be necessary. So what we need to introduce here to reduce all those unnecessary costs is to, on one hand, to have predictable elections calendar. So we know when elections to happen, so that when politicians want to adjust this, they still face the constraint. And second thing is to enhance fiscal prudence and responsibility. This can be done in many ways. For example, to have an independent parliamentary budget office to study on policy proposals raised by various parties, whether it's government or opposition. All these things would help us remember one thing, the keepest thing that we learn in economics, that's opportunity cost. For every good thing, you might have to forego everything else. And to have a good decision, you really need to think through about all the options and the opportunity cost that you have to consider.
Certainly. And also, of course, once again, emphasizing that economic growth and political stability are deeply interconnected. Moving on to some more recent developments, Prof. Now, concerns about the health status of MPs has led, of course, Devan Rakyat mandating health screenings for all by October the 31st. A good start to help keep the coffers fuller, perhaps, with regards to unexpected by-elections. Your thoughts, Prof, on making this more impactful and reducing frequent by-elections moving forward? Just we have the health checkups now. What should happen next?
Yes, certainly this is a good thing, whether or not that it would cause in by-election. I think it's always good to have our elected representative to be in good health. What is more important here, I think, is that we need to look at the larger questions of by-election, which can be caused by, say, for example, accident, and also factors that do not cut short the lifespans of our elected representative. For example, if any MP were to change their position, party affiliations, they would lose their seat and they have to face by-election. And those things are good. What we really need to look at here, if we want to reduce by-elections, the solution is not what proposed by former deputy chairman of election commissions, that is Sriwan Ahmad, that we should ban or prohibit or do away by-election. Instead, we should consider changing our electoral system. Currently, we have one vote for the federal parliament, one vote for the state assembly. But if you look at countries, and I'm talking about even just Asian countries like Japan, Korea, Taiwan, and as close as Thailand, people actually have two votes for the same legislature. One vote is for the elected representative, as we know, as we have it. The other vote is to vote for party. Now, how does it work if in Malaysia? If we're going to say we, on top of the 222 MPs, we create another layers of MPs who are directly representing party. For example, in Selangor, if you turn it into another layer of constituency, and let's say you give it 10 seats extra, and then every party can nominate up to 10 candidates. And for us, when we would, we just go by the party. And then the 10 seats will be allocated to different party. So if a party wins 40% of vote, the party would get 4 out of 10, at least 4 out of 10 from there. Now, what happens if one of the MP, for whatever reason, pick or ceases to be in office, then what we would do is that the next available candidate will replace it. So that seats would remain with the party without having a by-election.
Thanks for that, Prof. And now, before we end, though, just to re-emphasize, of course, and these are some of the challenges that occur when you've got frequent by-elections, institutional memory and the knock-on effect as each new MP who is elected after a sudden passing of an incumbent, the portfolio mandate being changed by the newly elected one. Why is this always problematic when it comes to especially hyper-localized issues and, of course, having continuity?
Actually, putting aside on the well-being of elected representatives, sometimes I think midterm change of elected representative may not necessarily be a bad thing. If you have a by-election, and some of the issue may be debated more timely, more effectively, some new issue could be bring into consideration throughout the campaign. So the new elected representative, if not the incumbent one, would probably champion some of the newer issues more effectively. But how do we actually make sure this does not cause disruption to institutional memory and so on? That come back to, for example, if we are looking at national issue, our parliament should consist of many select committees. Currently, we have only 10 to cover over 26 ministry portfolios. That's really not enough. We should actually have more so that all these MPs who are not, all MPs who are not minister, get to sit into one of these committees and play their role in scrutinizing and shaping policies and legal bills and so on. Now, if you have a by-elections and a new MPs get in and that MPs actually get to join one of these committees, they would have a role to play. And because that the institutional memory and functions is captured through all these committees, a change of a few members would not actually disrupt the work of the parliament so much. Currently, unfortunately, our MPs most of the time spend their times on constituency work because people cannot see how the lawmakers actually shape laws and policy if they are not ministers.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for that overview. Very comprehensive indeed, Chin Huat. That was Professor Wong Chin Huat, political scientist with San Wei University, discussing, of course, the economic costs of by-elections. We take a quick break now. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Niaga Spotlight.